Liveline on RT Radio 1 with a Kia EV6, Irish Car of the Year, and now European Car of the Year 2022. Discover the EV6 at kia.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. Pardon the pun, but you're in for a shock. If you're one of the 750,000 customers of Bord Gáis, either through electricity or gas, it's one of the biggest suppliers in the country now. They've just announced that your average gas bill from next month, from the 15th of April, will go up by 40%, just 1% short of 40%, 39%. Your average gas bill is going up. That's the biggest single jump in the history of gas bills, I think, in Ireland. The average gas bill will go up by 39% in less than a month's time, and the electricity bill, if you're with Bord Gáis Energy, will go up by 27%. So that's a shock. They're also terminating their winter price pledge immediately. And the company said it's working with MABS, the Money Advice Bridging Service, and establishing an energy support fund. Bord Gáis Energy blamed the price rises on the persistence of high demand on gas worldwide, reduced supplies, low storage volumes, geopolitical issues, and late winter conditions. Michael Moriarty. Michael, good afternoon.
Hello, how are
you? The word now, Michael, electricity going up just under 30% next month and gas going up 40%.
But all I can see them doing is robbing the poor. They're putting it up just because they can do. We can't switch. We can't do nothing because we're in such a low income.
And what is your, just tell me your own circumstances, Michael.
Well, we have an oil-fired central heating. Okay. We put on for half an hour in the morning.
Okay.
That doubled in price this year. And the government turned around and said, we don't fix oil. Well, herself keeps all the oil receipts we get. Last year we paid £35 for a fill of oil in tanks. This year, when we got oil fill, it was £100 in tax. They might have some excuse and say it's this Mickey Mouse word in their head, but it's still tax.
Because there's VAT and carbon tax. It's pity your line is not great. And do you electricity, your electricity bill? We presume it's going to be the same for the other suppliers of electricity, energy and ESB and what have you. But your electricity bill is going up by 30% next month.
But it's gone up through the roof already. They gave us that £200. But when they give £200, because we're on the old age pension, they give us 4 or 5 months down the line, not when it's gone up.
Okay, and the 200 euro was coming in the next, well, it'll be in the April bill, I think. Well, it depends on the logistics of it.
But then, if you're saying it's going up 40 to 30%, should that, you might as well give you a cup of water. Do you know, it's rubbish.
And how will you manage when, if gas goes up 40%, which it is, no if anymore, no if, and electricity goes up 30% in the next few weeks, how will you manage? What will you do?
What we do now is we light the fire on the front roof and we sit in there and we just, and what we did was we put an extra duvet on the bed and we put a hot water in the bed at night, a hot water bottle. We still have the old hot water bottle. And it's all right, Michal Martin and the rest of them are saying, here's a fiver. A ready fiver in 3 years.
Okay, well, it's a savage blow to so many people. It really is, it really is. And have you got, in your home, for example, Michael, obviously, have you a landline?
No, we don't, because that's another
charge, okay.
Have
you broadband or internet?
No, we don't have that, because we don't use it. Okay. I'm 67, herself is 69. And if you have to get that in there, I suppose when the grandchildren get older, they'll come and put it in for themselves to do whatever they're doing with that.
Yeah, yeah.
But we can't afford that.
Okay, hot water bottles and double duvets, my God. We never thought we'd be going back to that. And what about groceries and how are you managing there? Have you noticed the increase there, Michael?
Herself goes round we go into town, into Tralee once every 2 weeks.
Okay.
And Dunn's gives the tenner off on the petrol.
The 50,
and,
yeah.
And she does all the shops, Lidl's, Aldi's, all them shops. And she does that shopping. But everything's gone up 10, 15... Like, everything's gone 10-15% on each.
Well, let me ask you, you're in Kerry. Do you buy butter? Do you buy Kerrygold?
No, we don't. We buy the cheapest butter going because I eat margarine and you know that blue thing, I forget what it is.
So the cheapest butter going is margarine. That's what you're saying.
No. We buy ordinary butter. Herself likes butter.
Okay, of course.
That's the only thing luxury. She likes. And I eat the flour margarine. But that's gone up £2 a container in a year. €2. It's gone up €2 a container.
Yeah, and every other thing, every else. But it's a sad day when people in Ireland can't afford butter, where people in Ireland have to put double duvets on. Well, I don't know, people say, well, the climate change, people probably say, well, that's a good idea anyway. Use less.
But who represents us? We have two parties in there, and they went in with them fools of Greens, and they closed, open up the three turf power stations. We have men there able to work. We can produce our own electricity. And you have that Egypt of a fellow in the Green Party.
Okay, one person has it. But Michael, don't be worrying. Michael, but one, the statement Borgar say at the end, that they blame the price rises, the persistence of high demand of gas worldwide, reduced supplies, low storage volumes. Now, one of the problems in Ireland, Lucinda Creighton actually highlighted it in the Sunday Business Post on Sunday. There was an interest in building a liquid petroleum gas storage plant down near you, actually, down near Ballylongford.
Yeah, I see it, yeah.
But the Greens have said no. There's a veto on that, so that's gone. We've no storage for gas.
But they don't care about us. They care about their policies.
And then the geopolitical issues are obviously Ukraine. We've no control over that.
I understand that. I understand the important people out there. But that thing down there in Limerick should have been done 10 years ago. The 10 years fighting to get that in there.
But my understanding is the Greens managed to get a veto on it, and they said it will not be built because there's a possibility some of the gas that would be brought from the States to be stored there could have been produced by fracking. And then, well, you know the argument about that.
Well, I agree with... I disagree with fracking because they don't know what you're doing to the earth underneath. I'm not one of these people. I don't support the Greens. But I've lived long enough now that you shouldn't be Mickey Mouse and jelly igniting under the earth if you don't know what the crack is. Yeah. But they have a policy that they're going to put forward, and they don't care about us. They don't give a monkey's about the poor people. We got a fiver in 3 years, right?
This is
in our pension. Yeah. A fiver. And then the next, every time the electricity bill, it's gone out the window.
Yeah.
You know yourself. I'm not being rude about you. You might be on a good wage. Mm-hmm. You might be able to swallow some. I'm not being rude now. But when you get £230 a week and you get a fiver on top.
I know. I take that point so strongly. So, Lisa, good afternoon. 0818 715 815 51551 is the text number. We're talking about this announcement in the last few minutes from Bord Gáis. There's no ifs, no buts anymore, no speculation. Your gas bill is going up by 40% next month and your electricity bill is going up by 27%. Lisa, your point, please.
Joe, people are absolutely pushed. Talk about pin to the collar. This is ridiculous, Joe. People cannot afford. We're choosing whether we eat or heat the house at this stage. Do you know what I mean? That's an outrageous, an up-to-daylight robbery of an increase. And it can't be justified. I know of a lot of elderly people living alone. And it's heartbreaking, Joe. It's heartbreaking to listen to people saying, well, I can't buy bread, or I can't buy this, that and the other. Do you know, I
God, you heard Michael there and Kerry saying, Kerrygold, well, he buys the own brand butter, but the butter is a luxury to them. That's one thing they will try not to give up, obviously, because Irish people love butter, but it's just incredible. And double duvet, and light the fire in one room, and he's also given out with the fact you can't harvest turf anymore, you can't buy a bale of Irish peat briquettes, there's no storage facilities. This is for liquid petroleum gas. We obviously have oil storage in Dublin and indeed in Whitegate. But what can the government do? They're saying, Boris Gosh are saying geopolitical, which is obviously Ukraine, the demand worldwide, low storage volumes and late winter conditions. I don't know what that means, late winter conditions.
We've had a very
mild winter, haven't we?
We have, you know, we have had a mild winter, but the situation people are in, Joe, genuinely, I know so many people who are, my own expenses are gone through the roof. And then you have people, an awful lot of people still working at home. We've had 2 years, Joe, of increased costs on electricity, food,
people are at
home. And, you know, the kids are eating what you had set aside for the dinner, and they're eating at lunchtime, and you're kind of, you know, here, watch that. Do you know what I mean? You're watching everything in the house. And that's people who are working and people who have a few bob coming in. But life has changed dramatically, and this is all excuses. They're going to blame this now, Joe, on everything, every increase.
Well, the government, in one sense, they don't hand act their part. You know who owns Bord Gáis Energy? It's a British company. It's called Centrica. It's not owned. We nationalised gas many decades ago. It's a British company. It's a commercial company. That's what they're saying. We're putting it up. This is the reason we're putting it up. The government can maybe help at the other end by giving that 200 quid or increasing it, whatever. There's loads of levies on, there's a PSO levy, there's a carbon tax levy, which are imposed by the government. Tim Coakley, 51551 text. Your point, please, Tim.
It's Jim. Hello, Joe.
Jim,
thanks,
sorry.
Taking the message. Yeah. I was just wondering, some years ago I was looking at what the PSO levy was when it had gone up a lot. And in that particular year, from the regulator's website, I determined that what is collected from electricity customers was about 350 million,
okay,
which was then paid over to the renewable people, like windmill operators and so on.
Well, it was also paid, then, it's also been paid to subsidise peat generate electricity.
But we're told that's now being phased out. That's it, but renewables. Then last time I looked, it had dropped from 340 million to 175 million.
Okay.
That's about 12 or 18 months ago. But I was wondering, the object was to enable those people, windmills and so on, to compete with the other companies. They got this levy to help them meet the prices. But now that gas and oil, not only about the latest thing mentioned today, gas and oil has been going up for the last short while, but with the massive amounts they're talking about, 36%, I don't know, 39%. I don't know if they've included the effect of the PSO levy that's already been taken off. But if it hasn't been taken off, then it should be considered for being gone or much reduced.
It's still there. It's just under
it's
a five.
About 50 euro a year.
Yeah, it's about five or eight, each bill. But the bizarre thing is the PSO levy, I think, is around 450. But they then put VAT on the PSO levy, which it's a tax on a tax, and that brings it up to nearly a fiver, and there's VAT as well on your gas bill, and then there's carbon tax and PSO levy. People have phoned us in recent times with their ESB bill, where they've been away for a few months, but yet the ESB bill was 90-100 quid because it's the PSO levy, the carbon tax,
there's
an under usage charge, believe it or not, in the world we live in.
Jim,
how will you manage with the 40% increase in gas and 30% electricity?
Well, I'm self-sufficient at my age, Joe, thankfully. Yeah. But I do think of everybody else, and I'll be on to the regulator, probably today or tomorrow, to know what mm-hmm. is happening to the TSO levy. And if he says nothing, well, then I'll want to know why.
Okay, well, he said, you know what
that's
they'd
all
say.
I can do.
You know what they'd say. That's nothing to do with us. It's to do with it's the government who.
But the regulator determines every year. It's the regulator.
The amount, okay.
The amount that's paid. As I say, when I first looked at it, it was 350 million, which I nearly fell off the chair about. And then it dropped to 175 million.
Yeah.
Because the price of oil had gone up last year, whenever there was a big rise. But it's gone up more now. And the PSO levy either has been taken into account, or it's gone, or it's going to be reduced. It has to be reduced.
And the carbon tax, the reason the carbon tax was introduced, we were told, and was introduced nearly 12 years ago when the Greens were in government at that time as well, but the argument was that the carbon tax will encourage people to use less electricity, to use less gas, use less petrol. But people are using less at the minute, aren't they, because it's so expensive.
Right. Absolutely, Joe. That's all I wanted to do.
Okay. Point well made, Jim. Let's know how you get on with the regulator, Jim. That'll be fascinating. Thanks, Lee. Jim Coakley. Okay. John Moylan before the break. John.
Yes, Joe. How are you?
Your point, please.
Two quick points. The one was carbon taxes.
Yeah.
I believe there's more in the pipeline. And I think this latest round of increases being imposed in gas and electricity has to be the nail in the coffin of carbon taxes. Not only can they not be imposed, it's time to unwind the ones that are in there. Because as you just pointed out a second ago, it was supposed to reduce our demand.
Mm-hmm.
I live X amount of distance away from work and I commute by car. Irrespective of what the carbon tax is, guess what? The factory is the same distance away from my house and I still have to get there and the car still needs it. So the biggest winner in this always, and the first person with their hand out in these things, is the state. Whether through excise, VAT, carbon taxes, and I'll allude to USC for the same reason. I saw an article recently where he said it was unlikely to be unwound.
No, it's here to stay, The emergency tax that was brought in 10 years ago will be there forever.
But that's no longer good enough.
Carbon tax adds nearly 4.50 to a bag of coal. It adds a euro to the bale of briquettes. It adds 11 cents to a litre of petrol. It adds just under 100 quid to the average household gas bill, and it adds per annum, I presume, and it adds 103 quid to a 900 litre fill of heating oil. So it's quite substantial.
It is, and I don't know anybody who wantonly uses more of any of those fuels than is strictly necessary to live, to be comfortable, to commute to work, to school, to college, or go to hospitals or anything else. So the idea that by putting carbon taxes in that we're going to stop people commuting, stop people, is nonsense. And the whole premise on it is just obviously a vanity project for the Green Party, who shouldn't be within.
Well, you see, it's not. That's democracy. But in fairness to the Green Party, they won't say it's a vanity project. They say it's about saving the planet.
Every report
1-2 weeks ago from the UN buried under the Ukraine slaughter by Putin said that the clock is ticking for the planet unless we get a grip on carbon emissions and our use of fossil fuels.
Well, I have no harm in long-term planning to reduce it, but you don't do it by putting people to penury in the process. And you just alluded, you just said it yourself there, the article over that article on the paper that day was about the situation in the Ukraine. Do you think that anything else is any more important than human life? This shouldn't even be up for debate. They should be gone. And with regard to your comment about democracy, you're correct to a point. But nobody put the Green Party in the position it currently holds to influence the decision process other than the two main political parties. The public who elected them, who elected politicians generally, give the GP the mandate they seem to be wielding around the office because the other two people are afraid to stand up to them.
Okay, so Sharon Smith. Sharon, your point, please.
Well, I concur with everything that gentleman has just said. That was really what my point was.
Well, how will you cope with a 40% increase in your bill next month for gas
and
just under 30% for electricity?
You won't cope. We live in Ireland. We suffer with rising damp. People turn on their central heating to keep the damp out of their homes. not to turn around and live in a tropical Caribbean delight in their homes, to walk around in
their bare feet,
underwear. And that it's basically to keep the damp out of their pre-1980 houses, the majority, and that. And it's absolutely ridiculous to put the... I blame the Greens for everything. Sorry, Joe, I do. 95% of the population did not vote them in, and as that last gentleman said, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have put them in some semblance of power.
Well, you see, it's the numbers, and you know, it is whoever makes up the numbers. Okay, take your point.
I can take the increase, but I can't take the increase on top of their carbon tax, on top of all the taxes.
Well, that seems to be a big trend.
And that is it. I'll take one of the hits. I won't take two of the hits. And as I said to your researcher, I actually, if I could possibly resign from being Irish, I would. Because the amount of outrage that this society should have against its government for allowing its citizens, because we're quiet and subservient, for taking it up the jacksie, if you pardon the French, and that we have done nothing but roll over and roll over and roll over.
Okay, and you're saying that the government don't have a control over Ukraine, but you're saying they do have a control over the public service levy, and they do have a control over the carbon tax.
There's more carbon emissions given out with the shelling from Russia, Belarus,
and into Ukraine.
Think about it. If we want to save the planet, NATO, no fly zone, and therefore my carbon taxes for me and my grandchildren have been paid by stopping the flights over the no flies over Ukraine. And that's all they have to do.
And what about they say if we do that, Putin is threatened. What did he say? The most devastating attack in history. That's what he said. He's the one who introduced nuclear weapons into this whole debate, as well as everything else.
He did, but anyway, stopped Chernobyl. He's also power to Chernobyl again for a second time.
Terrible times.
But I mean,
okay, Sharon, what will you?
It's silly to be allowing the population to pay for this until we know what's going to happen.
Okay, you're saying whatever the government has control over, they should use it to get the bills down again. Well, it'll only be 5 or 6%, but it does make a difference. Okay, Sharon Smith, John Mylan, thank you both. Joe at RT.ie.
Liveline on RT Radio 1 with a Kia EV6, Irish Car of the Year, and now European Car of the Year 2022. Discover the EV6 at kia.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Robert, it happened last Saturday night. Yeah. Tell us what happened. It's your parents, very distressing.
Yeah, it was an awful evening for all my family involved. My mum had she's 84 years of age and she had a nasty fall at home.
Okay.
She's taken an ambulance up to Tallaght Hospital. My dad got in the ambulance early, he's 79. And they said that no one would be allowed in with my mother because of COVID protocols. But my dad was let in, I think, to be honest with you. They might have thought he was a patient as well. Anyhow, they were left for 12 hours. They were seen through 3 hours. But for 12 hours, my ma didn't receive any painkillers. Within that time, my dad was standing for 3 hours. They wasn't given a seat. And no one approached him, offered him a seat. Whether there was seats or not, I'm not too sure. That's not the big issue that happened. So my mum, subsequently her shoulder spoke, but she hadn't got scanned. She was there 12 hours. She weren't prioritised. She has Parkinson's, vulnerable people.
Poor woman.
She's a wonderful woman and a great outlook in life, always positive. And I hasn't held her back. That's all I can say. She doesn't lean on anyone for any support. Just we all do our best. My sisters and my younger brother are huge help to them. My younger brother still lives at home. But a man was restrained by four policemen on the ground about 6 hours after my parents had been there. Okay. I don't know who this man was. Subsequently, I talked to the guards and they said he was a patient at the hospital.
Okay.
I asked then if there was an issue with being restrained, why he wasn't restrained for the full time he was there, why he wasn't security with him. And I didn't get an answer. They said if they had arrested somebody, would have been restrained. So he obviously wasn't arrested. I don't know what instance he did to be restrained at that time.
Okay.
So I'm following on from that. My dad.
So where's your mother now? Is she in a cubicle? Take us back to Saturday night.
Sorry, apologise. She was on the trolley in the corridor.
So she's still in A&E.
At this stage, 9 o'clock. So that's roughly 11 and a half hours they're in the hospital. My ma still hadn't received the scan on her shoulder, hadn't received any painkillers. This man approached my dad, standing up beside my ma, and my ma actually was off trolley. She wanted to sit in the seat because she was uncomfortable after being lying on the trolley for 6 hours. So my dad was standing, this man approached my dad for whatever reason. I don't know if he's from the psychiatric department or was he an outpatient, I'm not sure. He finally attacked my dad with his knife. He lacerated my dad's head, knocked him to the ground and cut at the back of his ear. So the guards came in, restrained the man, pulled him off my dad. My ma screamed for help as much as she could. Obviously, she couldn't do much to help my dad being physically attacked by a man in his 40s for no reason apparent whatsoever. When my elder brother rang the guards yesterday, they said, oh yeah, there was a terrible incident up in Talla Hospital on Saturday night.
In the A&E in Talla.
In Talla, they admitted that, saying that this person was a mentally ill patient, a violent mentally ill patient. I just want to know, where was security? What's the protocol of the HSE to protect the elderly and vulnerable people? By the grace of God, my parents are all right. My dad is alive and well. He's at home. He had staples in his head. He's a cut in the back of his ear. He's worked hard all his life. He's retired at 65. He worked from 15. He's nothing but contributed to this society. Same with my ma. Has done a wonderful job of bringing all this up. And, you know, just wonderful human beings and so considerate of other people and wouldn't hurt a fly. And just genuine, decent human beings. And the last thing,
Robert, how does your dad? Where was your dad sitting when this man attacked him in A&E?
My ma was on the trolley in the corridor. Yeah. My dad was standing beside her.
Okay.
My ma was feeling more in pain by lying down, so my dad helped her out. She sat down on the seat, and my dad was just standing beside her, just as he had all her life looked after her, and just trying to protect her. And then this man approached him out of the blue. Went up to him and knocked him down to his knees, and then with a sharp implement stabbed him in the head and stabbed him in the back of his ear and knocked him to the ground. And my mom just screamed for help, and then he was restrained, this person. And my mom then after that got an x-ray of the shoulder. Everything was all happened real quick then.
Okay.
Doctors and nurses fell over, not accuse blame of what the nurses and doctors do. I know how extremely hard their job is, and I can only imagine a Saturday night in Talla Hospital.
But you said there was an incident earlier where there were six Gardaí.
Yeah, holding that man down. But
the same man, do you believe?
The same man, the exact same man my dad said. He's seen it. He said he doesn't know what happened and why this man was restrained earlier. I don't know what the incident involved. But I can't understand, if this man was known to be violent or physically had to be restrained earlier on, why he wasn't security with him, or why wasn't he in handcuffs? And, like, do you have this protocol of people going in on their own now because of COVID? I know it's still in the system. People are vulnerable in the hospital. But surely, if I'm under 18, an adult could come in with me. Surely there has to be something. If you're a vulnerable older person, there has to be a younger person should be allowed in with me.
And the hospitals are brilliant. But they do make exceptions. Say, for example, if the patient has dementia, you can bring someone in with them, to assist them.
Joe, just you took the words in my mouth, to be honest, because my dad was getting in the ambulance. And the ambulance man, and they're extremely good people, but he did say to me that I'm not sure if you'll be allowed in. There's people with dementia going in on their own. So I don't know if that's factually what you're saying. I don't know. I have no experience of that. But I'll tell you what we were told. But my dad said, no, he's going to go up and try. And he was allowed in. But after being nearly married for 55 years, he's not going to leave Ma on her own, vulnerable in a hospital. Never was that going to happen. And we all felt safe and happy that my dad was there to look after her mother. But being, like, I don't know, it was Irish or that generation, they just sat there and waited for people to come to them. And when no one came with painkillers, for 3 hours my dad standing before anyone said anything to them. They'd got triage then. But why was she left for 12 hours without getting a scan? Yeah. And she's pregnant, and I don't understand that. Should they not prioritise the old people, get them scanned. Say, okay, you can be allowed out. You can be put in a cast. Yeah. And then they could have been out there after 4 hours.
Why? And do you know, Robert, does your father know what implement this man?
I'm not sure. No, to be talking about. He couldn't even remember how he got back up off the ground.
And your mommy told us is 84. What age is your dad? They've been married, 55?
Oh, yeah, I don't say 79. We're not allowed to speak about one being younger than the other.
But they're together for 55 years and more.
They're incredible people.
And I'm also thinking of the fact that your dad, Jimmy, has to go through. I know what your mother's going through, but he used to go through, as you say, he's looking after her at the minute.
Upset
as well.
Yeah, and just the shock of what happened for the whole family, that where is the security? Where is the money?
Was this man then arrested by the Gardaí again?
But he was taken to a cell in Talla. So we don't know what's happened since the guards were meant to call out to the house yesterday for my dad to make a statement. They went to the wrong house. Okay. And he didn't. I know, like, I'm saying, like, an older critical. I'm just telling their story and what's happened. But I just don't understand the policies of people over a certain age are vulnerable. Whether, you know, they're injured, if they're going to hospital, there's something wrong. So why can't the younger person be gone in with them to probably help them? The last thing, I would like them being with parents, but the last thing I would have been taught, I'd be detecting from someone getting violently attacked in the hospital. Like, there's a duty of care at the hospital. When you go in there, that should be the safer place you're in. And I know, I have a duty of care to my parents and hope my siblings do, to try and look as best we can. But when we're leaving them in other people's care, we don't expect them to come back out in a worse condition than they went in.
And your mother's broken shoulder, that was a fall or whatever.
She tripped. Yeah, and she has Parkinson's, but that it was just a trip. And she hurt her face and she broke her shoulder. And she has
the two of them back at home now.
They're at home. They're at home. God, yeah, they're upstairs and they're having their magnums, their ice cream. We allow them the odd treat.
I hope they have it every day.
Sometimes I'd like to look after their figures and their health. But I just want to say, where is the money being put into the hospitals? Whether it is an extra staff they need, and I'm sure the nurse said to my sister that for 20 years they're looking for extra security in Talla Hospital in the A&E for 20 years.
Well, it's a shocking attack. A man with his wife. His wife's been taken to hospital in an ambulance in A&E. She's been on the trolley because of the queue in A&E.
Yeah, exactly.
And while Jimmy Hanser standing beside Patricia Hanser, both of them just around 80 years of age.
Yeah.
He's attacked out of the blue by another patient.
Yeah, exactly. I think he was from the psychiatric department, but I can't be 100% certain. I don't have the evidence to back that up.
Okay.
But what I'm trying to say is they're building a children's hospital, which is wonderful, in James Street. I know I'm going off tangent for the slope, but I'm just talking about money. If you're talking about the money, if that's an issue. That hospital is going to cost £2 million. The biggest building in the world.
£2 billion.
The biggest building in the world costs £1.5 million. And I know that's built where it is, instead on a green site, so it can be sold where it's
consulted. You've seen the hospital. It's nearly finished.
But that's because the consultants want it in beside their private practices.
Well, that horse has bolted.
It's gone, but true enough.
Okay, Robert, kind regards to Patricia and Jimmy. He's working since he was 15.
Yeah.
And where did he work?
Well, he worked in Roundtrees for a long time, and he worked in Carberry's. When we were growing up in the late 70s, it was a good time to be a child.
You were very popular in school. Kind regards to Jimmy and Patricia.
Two great people.
Give them our kind regards. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe at RTE.ie. Victoria Vogel runs a B&B in Kells in County Meath, but a lot of her family and friends are still in Kyiv. Victoria, your contact with your family, how are they now and what is happening there now?
Hello, I live in County Kerry.
Kells, County Kerry, yes, of course there's two, there's more than two, well said.
Yeah, I'm in contact constantly with my friends in Kherson, in Kyiv, in Ukraine, and the situation is getting worse. Maternity places are bombed, churches are bombed, My mom today, actually, she's 83 and she remembers Second World War, and now she can't see her grandchildren. She can't see her great-grandchildren. She's sitting in the cellar afraid that her house will be bombed. Some cities are absolute ash. You know, it's...
Cemeteries, as the Pope said. Cities into cemeteries. Putin is doing it.
Is this 22nd century? Is this modern world? Can't they discuss it on the high level and stop this horrible situation?
Now, you say that you run a B&B in Kerry. What are you now doing?
I have these words in my policy that no people who support the war in Ukraine are welcome in my household. And B&Bs here in Kells, in Kerry, are supporting me. Denise Collins, Agnes Sullivan, they support my policy as well. And I ask other B&Bs in Ireland, please support this policy. People who want this war to continue, this horrible, insane situation to continue, please support
me. And then you're flying in a Ukrainian flag.
Yeah, I put Ukrainian flag, and I'm very proud that I'm Ukrainian. Even I lived for 23 years in Ireland, and I'm happy that I live here. Irish people are very supportive. I have every day somebody comes and asks me what can they do for Ukraine, how they can help. I had the offers from people. They brought me money. I send them to my friends and family. Some people say that they can give shelter to some people, but from Kherson region, they can't escape anywhere. Children are dying. Newborn children lost their parents. Children who are 1 month old. Who wants that? That's why I ask Irish people to support it. Just please, let's stop somehow the war. I believe that if everybody will do one little thing, it will become, in the end, big thing.
Okay. And I don't. I hope you're not in any doubt of how much support you have, the Ukrainian people have in Ireland, Victoria, and we'll keep in touch. That's Victoria Vogel. Now, Elaine, and in Kells County Kerry, Elaine Levy has contacted us. What's your situation, Elaine?
Hi, Joe. My friend Olga and seven of her family members are coming over. We have secured a house here. And
okay, well
they're
done.
Currently in a hotel, a refugee centre in Poland.
Okay.
And our problem is, thanks to a community that have got all this together, they have secured flights with Ryanair and they're coming in to Dublin on the 24th of March. But they can't bring their little doggy, and I am desperately trying to get the little doggy transported over for them.
Their dog.
Yeah, the dog is with them in the refugee centre in the hotel. And they asked Ryanair would they fly the dog over, but Ryanair seemingly don't because he hasn't got his passport. Obviously, they had to flee and they didn't bring the documents for the dog. He's fully vaccinated, but I thought we tried some of the rescues, but they're working in Poland and they're going across the border to rescue the dogs in Ukraine. So they're not coming back.
But dogs from Ukraine are allowed into Ireland, aren't they?
They are, yes. Also, we've been on to the Department of Agriculture and they have told us that they are allowed in. They can quarantine once they get here, but they are allowed in. There's free travel for them across into Ireland. But what I need is if I could locate somebody who's actually going over with a van or a truck with aid to Poland and coming back to Ireland, would they take a little shih tzu in their cab with them?
That's an interesting angle, to say the least. What part of Poland are they in?
They're actually in a hotel now near Wrocław in Poland. It's the refugee centre they were sent to when they crossed the border, and the doggy is with them. So I'm sort of under pressure to get the doggy back, even preferably before they get here, because once they leave on the 24th, I don't know what's going to happen to the doggy and they don't know what they're going to do with it.
And we had right from, I know the obvious concentration has been on the slaughter of the innocents and the people who are being murdered by Putin. But as we heard last week, when people are uprooting everything in a hurry, they do, their lives revolve around, so many things, including pets. Pets. Okay,
as far as I'm concerned, I'm bringing in 9 members of the family, not just 8. So if anybody has a van or a truck that's going over that could help us, we'll supply if they need a crate or leads or anything.
Yeah, a car, yeah.
We'll provide all that. No matter where the dog, if they can get it into Ireland, we'll collect it from anywhere. All we need is to get the doggy from the refugee centre.
But are they on the Polish border again? I need the name of that city that they're in.
I have the name of the exact place. It's like a village, but I can't pronounce it, Joe. But it's Wroclaw, W-R-O-C-L-A-V,
in big. Poland. That's very big.
Yeah,
that's
big. That's where they are. Their hotel, our hotel, Argentina, in Wroclaw.
Oh, that's it's in Silesia, but it's close enough to the border, and it's a major hub as well for people travelling through through Poland. Like it's a big city. So we presume I think it's nearly a million people living there. But anyway, okay, Wroclaw has got a W-R-O-C-L. Is anyone going out there next week and can help with the lovely little... what's the Shih Tzu's name? Does anyone know?
The Shih Tzu's name is Peppa, and it's a little male. He's three years
and
old.
How's their morale? How's their morale?
They're very sad.
Yeah.
Very sad. The text messages going back and forth between myself and Olga are just... They're heartbreaking. Yeah. Olga used to live with me as she went home in 2005. Okay. And she created a lovely life for herself over there. She worked very hard in Ireland and saved a lot of money and went home and bought her apartment. And she saved enough to put herself through college. And when she went back home, she put herself through college and became an accountant.
Well done.
And had a nice life. Yeah. And now she has just had to flee. She had to leave her mum and her brother behind because her brother couldn't leave. And her mum wouldn't leave her brother.
Okay.
So she's travelling with her... sister-in-law and her cousin and their children. So there's three girls and five children.
Yeah, you sound like a sister, do you?
Oh, it's terrible, Joe. It's heartbreaking. But we know they're safe now, but we want to try and give them a life here if we
can.
You're
planning a welcome for them here, I presume.
Oh, yeah. The community they're going into have been absolutely
incredible. And it's still
bittersweet.
You saw that photograph today on the... front of the Irish Times, that ceremony yesterday in Fingal where they raised the Ukrainian flag over the council offices, and people who arrived in Ireland from Ukraine on Saturday, they were weeping openly at the turmoil and the trauma they've been through and what their fellow countrymen and women are going through and will go through. Elaine, well done. Elaine,
thanks indeed.
Joe at rte.ie.
Liveline on RTÉ Radio 1 with the all-new Kia Sportage, built for endless inspiration. The all-new Sportage, now at your local Kia dealer.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Another issue, Aine. Now, by the way, hopefully we'll be doing this later on, but a number of people have been in touch with us to say, I want to take in Ukrainian families. I live alone. I have a spare bed, spare room. But I also get the fuel allowance and disability allowance. And the living alone allowance, of course. Will I lose it? Now, the department have just confirmed in the last few minutes that providing accommodation for Ukrainian refugees does not impact on any person's social welfare entitlements, OK? Just be clear about that, because we couldn't get a clear answer this morning. But now it's clear. Providing accommodation for Ukrainian refugees will not impact in any way on any person's social welfare entitlements. And this is a priority for the Minister, Heather Humphreys, and the Department, and proposals in this regard will be brought forward. So it couldn't be, you won't be losing any benefits. It couldn't be clearer than that. We sorted this out for one family last week, but what is your situation with your sister from Ukraine, Aine?
Hi, Joe. Thank you so much for taking the call. I will explain the situation. I am a Ukrainian citizen. I have been married to an Irish citizen for over 15 years. I used to live in Ireland. I went to Trinity. This is my second home. I am currently residing in the U.S., but my family is in Ukraine. And I had to come and help out. And my sister, who is a year older, and she has an eight-year-old daughter, they traveled from Ukraine, from eastern Ukraine, all the way to Polish border during the most challenging times. It took them over 2 days to get to Polish border, and I was able to meet them in Poland. The support of many organizations, volunteers, governments have been phenomenal. And now we are in Ireland, west of Ireland, in Riverstown. We are safe and sound after traveling for so long.
And why can't you get in?
Irish government has been fantastic, providing visa-free entry into the country. The immigration, the social welfare people, we've been overwhelmed by the amount of support we have received so far. Our challenge right now is dealing with insurance company, specifically trying to get my sister added to my father-in-law insurance, who is Irish, of course, so that she is able to drive a car and live a normal life.
And what is the problem?
We are now in the west of Ireland, and we
need a
absolutely
car.
rely on a pair of wheels to be able to go and take my niece to school. And when we applied for, and she has been a driver in Ukraine for the past 20 years. So it was very disappointing to hear back from insurance company that they are not insuring Ukrainians. This is the exact
answer we got to my
father-in-law when he sent the application. So I really hope that the exceptions can be made right now. Help is needed right now.
We are dealing with
devastating war and humanitarian crisis. And as amazing as it is to see so much help coming from every single corner, it is quite frustrating and disappointing to get such a pushback from an insurance company.
Well, we'll get
that
on, because
thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for letting me speak up, and I certainly hope that my voice can be heard and the exceptions can be made so that it's a little bit easier be able to add Ukrainians to car insurance so that they're able to go about life.
We sorted out someone last week, and the AA stepped up to the plate. So we'll hopefully sort this one out again, and safe travelling to your family as well. Anne-Marie Henley, you are the one who raised the question with us, which no one had thought about. What is your situation? You want to take in a Ukrainian refugee?
That's right. I actually did. I went online and I sought out all the information that I needed to sort out. And I got in contact with somebody.
Okay.
And we had sorted it out that a person that they knew were actually coming here. I have a spare bedroom.
Okay.
So I was more than willing to take them in.
And you were worried about?
But this is the next thing. I then rang just to check everything was legal and above board. And I was told by Citizens Advice that because I am on disability, that I would lose my living loan allowance and I would lose my fuel allowance.
Well, that's gone. I can tell you that's gone. It's not yet. We just had a statement, I said, in from the department. Taking a Ukrainian refugee in, providing accommodation, will not impact on a person's social welfare entitlements. Full stop. This is a priority for the minister and the department, and proposals in this regard will be brought forward. And they say, where a person is in receipt of social welfare income support, fuel allowance, living alone allowance in your own case. If you provide accommodation to a person fleeing Ukraine, this will not impact on your social welfare entitlements. I couldn't be clearer than that, Anne, but well done.
Well, that's brilliant, because up to Wednesday, that was the information I got on Wednesday.
Well,
I wanted to put it forward was I didn't want anyone else being disappointed.
Yeah, well spotted, and well done for what you're doing as well, Anne-Marie. Well done
absolutely,
for what you
least
do.
I can do.
Yeah, okay, well said. Okay.
Joe, thanks a million.
Thank you, Anne-Marie. Thank
All
you.
All right, and take care now. God bless.
That's I'm saying, the statement from the department, your benefits are your support, such as fuel allowance, living alone allowance, are not affected if you take in a Ukrainian refugee.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Well, I'm looking at the newspapers as they're coming online now, and they all have the same headline: The Greatest Showman. Tom Duffy has died in his 90s. John McColgan of Riverdance is in Washington with Riverdance at the Kennedy Centre for Patrick's Week. John, you want to lead the tributes to Tom Duffy, who you knew very well.
I knew Tom going back to when I was 7 years of age. I saw him in Ferns in the grounds of the old castle there. And it was the beginning of my love affair with show business and performance and Duffy Circus, and over the years I've become very close to David and the grandsons.
Yeah.
And I've watched old Tom the Warrior as he got weaker and weaker. He had cancer, he had COVID, he had a number of strokes, but he was a fantastic warrior, and all the nurses in the hospital loved him and flirted. He was an outrageous flirt, very handsome man, and continued to chat him up until a few days ago when he went into a coma.
Yeah.
An extraordinary artiste. He was one of the best trapeze artists in circus. He was a really wonderful horseman and ran the circus. And when his legs gave out in latter years, he would sit in the edge of the row watching his sons, Jamie and Tom, doing their fantastic acts in the circus.
Yeah.
And it's just this little story. My granddaughter Lola, like me, is fascinated with the circus, and she goes to see Duffy's Circus at least twice a year. Okay. And she knows them all, and she calls them my friends, the Duffy's. And last Sunday she went to see Duffy's Circus, and she was talking to David, and he said, "What are you doing?" She said, "Where's your papa?" "Oh, he's gone to America to see Joe Biden."
Okay.
And David said, "Is he a dancer?" "No, he's the president of America." So anyway, Brilliant. The legend or the relationship with Duffy Circus continue. And my condolences to David and Stephanie and Tom and Jamie. It's an incredible institution. They survived COVID and they're back on the road. Better and bigger than ever.
And you can talk directly to David there. He's on the other line, John. David Duffy, only child of Tom, son of Tom and Gertie. David Duffy, good afternoon and condolences.
Hi, hi, Joe. And thanks so much for your kind words, John. You've been a great friend to us all. And it's really appreciated, like the support you and Joe have been giving us.
But he is in your beautiful tribute on Facebook there in the last few minutes. You say he was the greatest showman. Tell us what age was he, David, and where was he born?
Dad would have been 93 next month.
Same as my mother, yeah.
Yeah, he was born in my grandma's caravan in Limavady in 1929 when the circus was there just for the one day. And since then he's travelled every year except for the last couple of years when he's been at Piemont, but he's travelled the length and breadth of the country, and as I say, he's lived in every city, town, and village in Ireland. He was, and he is a brilliant, brilliant man. I could never really put into words exactly how much he was cared for, how much he was loved. He was a giant of a man in so many ways. He had one of those personalities that when he walked into a room, everybody noticed him. A giant man and such a gentle, kind man. He absolutely loved his family. He lived for his family. And, like, you know, I've told stories before about, like, 30 years ago, Dad had cancer of the colon and the surgeons gave him 6 months to a year to live. And he told them that it just wasn't convenient for him to die, that he wanted to watch his grandson growing up, and he said he'd get back to them. So he's waited 30 years, and, like, he's obviously got back to them now that his time was ready. But, like, he had cancer in one of his kidneys 15 years ago. He had the kidney taken out. He was back 5 days afterwards, back on the show, back doing what he loved. He had COVID twice, you know, numerous heart attacks.
And David, are you saying he was born in 1929?
Yeah.
And you're saying, did he not leave the circus to go to school? Or?
No, my dad never seen the inside of a classroom.
My God.
Dad was self-taught, and obviously, you know, he learned everything that he needed to learn, you know, in family circus and traveling the length of breath. And it was one thing, okay, that my mum and dad had made the choice like 40-odd years ago. 50-odd years ago. How old am I now? to send me off to school for 10 years because they felt it was really important for me to have an education. And I know it was something, those 10 years was hard. I mean, it was a huge sacrifice for mum and dad to make, and, like, you know, we'd spoke about it over the years, and as I shared with you the other day, Joe, you know, he left a message with one of my cousins to tell me when he was gone that it was one of his biggest regrets, and that if he ever had the time again, he would.
If one of us, I know, but he was literally born in the wagon of a travelling show,
yeah,
and he never left that show for, apart from the last year or so and things. And he was an accomplished. There's an incredible photograph in the Examiner website of your father in his Lone Ranger mode on his Tonto the horse. I think Tonto's. It's an incredible photograph. But he was an incredibly agile, fit man. He's an incredible circus performer. He was a trapeze artist. He was an incredibly accomplished horseman. Did he? Yeah. Did you ever see you? You would never have seen him perform on the trapeze, would you?
No. Dad, he gave that up, you know, just after I was born. But, I mean, I obviously seen Dad in the ring, like, presenting the horses, and obviously as a ringmaster. And obviously, I worked with Daddy when I was five. I mean, my first act in the circus ring was a perch act, a big high, where Dad would balance like a big pole on his shoulder, and I would climb up it and perform above him. And I remember, like, when as a kid, the only one thing I ever said to him was, "Dad, if I fall, would you catch me?" And he said, "Of course I would." And I can remember as a child, the only one time I fell was in the national stadium as a kid. We were working there. And I can remember one of the poles, it was so wet with condensation. I lost my balance, or I lost my grip. And I fell about, 14, 15 feet. But Dad was underneath, and he caught me. And he put me down on the ground, and playfully, and being the showman, he gave me a little bit of a kick in the arse. And
start again.
I cried my eyes out after that because he made a show of me.
Let's listen to his wonderful voice. This is the late Tom Duffy, who died today. And as I say, all the papers, the headlines as they go online here now are Ireland's greatest showman.
The 5th of April, 1929, my dad's circus pulls into Limavady. And he's putting up the big poles with his men. Somebody roars and shouts at me, "Dad, Mr. Duffy, you have another son." And I arrived as they were just putting up the big poles. And when anybody asks me sometimes, where were you born? I say, I was born in the field. And it was. I was born in the field in Mavari.
And that's from a film Circus Man, a gorgeous small short film made by Jessica Fuller, Still Point Productions, on the IFI website. John McColgan, you captured that excitement, which is starting again. Now, it's one of the great, great... We talked to David and about his father and surviving COVID. He survived the Second World War. He survived foot and mouth disease. But John, the excitement when the circus came, the first live performance so many young children would ever see.
Well, I know it's a cliche, but I did want to run away with the circus. The ladies in the spangly tights and the cleavages and flying through the air and the magic and the clowns and the athleticism. I'd never seen anything like it. And I went to the circus when I was a kid every year that I could save up the sixpence to go. And when years ago, with John Huston, Shirley MacLaine, Eric Clapton, Sean Connery, we did a very special circus production with Stuffy Circus for down in, what was the name of the place? And anyway,
Strathfield. Okay.
I did a documentary about it. I think it's still online. And at the moment, we must do something about it. My brother Jared has been filming the circus for the last 3 years. He's filmed it before COVID, during COVID, and he has a lot of fantastic footage of Tom Duffy with his grandchildren watching them. So we're putting together a documentary that will cover the later years of Tom Duffy and Duffy Circus, and it's a fly on the wall, and it's fantastic.
Okay, Mick Redmond is on the line. Mick, you want to remember the great Tom Duffy?
Yes, Joe. First of all, I want to offer my condolences to David and Stephanie and young Tom and Jamie.
Yeah.
I got to know Duffy Circus from coming to Talla many, many years ago. They've always been coming to Talla, and the last 8 or 9 years they've been coming to the local GAA club, and I got to know them really, really well, and a nicer family you couldn't meet, including Tom Senior, Lord of Bearsman. Like, they always come onto our ground and left it immaculate.
They have a reputation for that.
There was nothing too much for them to do, you know, and Tom is really, really going to be missed in the circus industry in Ireland. Really sad day for the circus in Ireland.
It really is. And David, your father was born in 1929, born into the circus, and there was old circus family, Ireland's own, Duffy's Ireland's oldest circus. But then he set up his own circus. When was that? Tom Duffy's circus as we know it today, the surviving. Yeah. When was that set up?
That was in 1979, on Dad's 50th birthday. We opened in Blessington. That was like Dad, Mam, and myself. But Dad had made the decision because at that time, you know, Dad and his six brothers, there was just a lot of us in the family, and Dad was concerned that there wasn't, you know, there was too many mouths to feed. So Dad decided, like, once I'd come 18, you could see I had a real passion for the business. So we started our own show, back in April 5th, Dad's birthday, 1979.
And you survived foot and mouth, you survived the troubles in the north, because you've an incredible reputation up north as well. You visit there regularly and consistently. And how did the circus survive COVID?
COVID, as Dad and I said, was the biggest threat to our heritage and to our way of life, and like everybody else in the event sector and the live entertainment sector, it was a real struggle for 18 months. I had to obviously not tell Dad, all of the truth about what things was happening, because I, like thousands and thousands of other folks, had to endure the conversations through a microphone outside the window of his room, and obviously Dad was so really concerned about it.
But is it true, David, that when you went back to your winter quarters near Navan with the beautiful stables and everything, that your father he was reluctant to live in a house?
Daddy, Dad He lived in the house about 8 years ago for 3 months in total one winter, but he couldn't get used to it. He wasn't comfortable with the size of the house. He preferred to be in his trailer, so his trailer was just parked outside the house, and that's where my dad was most comfortable. And that's where my dad sat. You know, in latter years, even on the show, my dad would sit in his chair looking out the window, and he would summon me. He would summon me every time when he'd seen me passing by, and tell me what he could see and what was going on.
Okay. Let's hear Tom, the great late Tom Duffy's voice again.
Years ago, we went to New Ross, and there was a water trough on the station. So we used to bring all the horses down to get a drink. And I had a horse that Dad would just have to buy in. So I had this horse anyhow, and they were all around this water. And this horse turned around to kick the one I had in my hand. And he kicked me under the chin there. And I fell on the bonnet of the railway lorry and fell down the far side. And when I did, the horses were still kicking. The one what I had at that particular time turned around to kick the other one back and give me another one. 4 stitches underneath and 3 down here. That would be about 12 o'clock. 4 o'clock, I was doing my trapeze act, holding my brother out of my teeth.
Incredible. Incredible.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that was, that was Dad. He was, he was showman to the last, and... You know, it was more than a wish. It was his demand that that the show kept going. So that's what we're going to do.
David, he's so proud of the grandsons of your
sons,
and your sons are the consummate circus act that won gold medals around the world for their Wheel of Death and for other things. They're fantastic young men, and he certainly lives on. In them, and your lovely wife Stephanie was a great woman for doing in later years. Steph, really looked after him.
Steph looked after him really well. She was his carer for the last 10 years after Mammy passed. He never missed being in the show, watching the boys.
Is it not true, David? Because the as you say, you're, as John said rightly, the two lads now, Tom and Jamie, Tom's grandsons, your sons, Stephanie's sons, and Gertie's grandsons as well. They do this incredible high wire act. But is it true that they had to, because your father, Tom, would have been worried about them doing that act?
If Dad had his way, Joe, that act would have never taken place. When Tom and Jay decided to get the prop made for that Wheel of Death, which they're so accomplished at, and as John has said, like that they've won awards in Monte Carlo and China, England, and Germany. But we didn't tell Dad about it. Because he even though Daddy was a trapeze artist and worked 40 feet above the audience, it was something that he never wanted for Tom and Jay. So
incredible.
They got the big prop made, and the idea was then that we would get it in on the ground without Dad seeing it.
Okay.
So that the lads could practice it, and then sort of when it was time, then just let Daddy know. So when I arrived back with the prop in Limerick, Stephanie went into the wagon to talk to Dad to distract him while I got the wheel around the back of the tent.
Well,
unfortunately, the next morning, Dad was driving around in his Jeep, which he always loved to do. He would drive around the show every day just to see what was going on. Seeing the wheel, asked one of our guys, our workers, whose wheel was that? They told him it was Tom and Jamie's. So at the intermission of the show, Dad caught Jamie's eye and summoned him with a face like thunder, called him over and told him, that he'd seen the wheel and it was theirs. And the lad said, well, we're not going to be doing that much on it, Dad or Granddad. And Dad told him, you won't be doing anything on it, son, because
I'm going to throw it in the effing dish, a ditch, and then drive a car over it. So
they are doing it, and the show must, as Tom always said, I know there's no show today, but the show will be on tomorrow in Naas. Is it Naas? Naas race course.
Yeah. Okay. We open tomorrow night in Naas.
It's a sad day for your family, especially, and for the circus world, and for the show people in Ireland. Yeah. Legendary Tom Duffy.
Before I go, Joe, can I just say a huge, huge thank you? And I couldn't thank them more. Everybody at Piedmont Care for looking after Daddy for the last 4 years and through COVID and everything. They're incredible, brilliant people.
As he was a legend has passed with the death of Tom Duffy, who died today, 1929, 2022. John McColgan, and above all, David Duffy. Thank you, Dean. Sian O'Gorman, producer. Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RT Radio 1 with a Kia EV6, Irish Car of the Year, and now European Car of the Year 2022. Discover the EV6 at kia.com.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.